but you know that things aren't quite like that. The other day, Dad old Sammy asked me for some bread. He said he needed a little extra to calm his stress from these methodological demons.
As we are recording this podcast in Chico, California, and are employed by the university, we acknowledge and are mindful that CSU Chico stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, and we recognize the Machupta and their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that once sustained the Machupta people for centuries.
Hello, everyone. My name is Teresa Hernandez, and I am joined with my co-host, Joshua Whittinghill. Hey, Josh.
Hello, Teresa. I am so excited now to finally be recording our first episode and to be doing it with you.
Thank you. Yes, it's a long time coming. I'm super excited to be brought along on this project, but we'll go into that a little bit deeper later. I want to welcome you all to our podcast, First Generation, One of Many. Our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness and understanding, provide a voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty and staff working with our first generation students.
Thank you. And to start our episodes, we're going to have a quote, a poem, or a lyric for each episode that kind of ties into the theme and the discussion. So today's comes from Michelle Obama. When I first arrived at school as a first-generation college student, I didn't know anyone on campus except my brother. I didn't know how to pick the right classes or find the right buildings. I didn't even bring the right size sheets for my dorm room bed. I didn't realize those beds were so long. So I was a little overwhelmed and a little isolated. And when we found this quote, Teresa and I decided that really helps to sum up kind of the overarching themes that we're going to be talking about on these episodes and the mission of our story, to kind of really share different experiences that students are having as first generation in higher education. And as I mentioned, it is so exciting for me to be finally doing this podcast. It's been a couple of years in the making for me. Behind the scenes, I had some ideas of certain topics for podcasts, and they all just sort of never really melded together. And then finally moving into the idea of first generation being a focus of the podcast really took hold, and I was able to find a number of people who were interested, but mostly interested in being guests or coming on to talk about certain things, right, and sharing certain things. And no one had the time to be able to be a host or a co-host because it does take a little extra time behind the scenes. I know Teresa and I do a lot after hours and on the weekends for this podcast to make sure that we are able to get things organized and have topics and reach out to certain guests. And we've been able to send out a survey to get input from people who might be interested and really collect all this information. But one of the major obstacles, and I have to put it out there, is that myself, I am not first generation. And so it was extremely important for me to have a co-host who does identify as first generation to be able to bring that experience and that perspective and lens into the podcast as well to really help me even learn more as we're approaching different topics. And so a little bit about me, I'm Joshua Whittinghill, and I have, like I said, I'm not first generation, but I grew up in a house where talking about college or going to college didn't really come up very often. So I had the benefits and the experience of having a family, you know, a parent who did graduate from college, but then the idea of college for me wasn't really there. And so then when I went off to school, I really didn't have set guidelines or organized plan of what to do for college. And it was really a turbulent experience for me in that I was so bad at being a college student, I spent the first 4 years on academic probation. So my GPA was below a 2.0. At one point, I tell people, I got a letter, this is before email, so I got a letter, came in the mail, and I always say it was sort of this, congratulations, you've qualified for disqualification. But I was doing that poorly at a community college. And then I moved to Chico at that point, and finally bumped my GPA up high enough to be accepted to CSU Chico. I think if it was happening now, I don't know that I would even be eligible or be able to get into a university having a 2.1 or a 2.0 as a transfer student. It could be a very difficult process nowadays compared to back when I did it in the mid-90s, early 90s, excuse me. And so once I finally got into campus, of course, my first year at Chico State, of course, I was immediately on academic probation because nothing changed. I didn't really do anything different. And then thankfully, I did meet a professor who was very supportive and helped me to be successful in that course. And then it kept me from being disqualified. And then at that moment, I learned a lot, made some life changes, some extreme choices, and really dove into my education and spent more time than ever before in moving forward that next 3 or 4 years to be able to complete a degree and graduate. And so then I really became this lifelong learner, this lifelong student. And I say lifelong because I'm always learning and I'm always trying to improve and understand more about education. But at that time, as I graduated, and my first degree was in music, and then I was looking at going into graduate school, and it wasn't really working out because my GPA wasn't the greatest, my experience wasn't the greatest. So I was able to, at that point, be hired on campus in the role that I currently have as an academic advisor with the Educational Opportunity Program. And then I also, over the years, became the assessment coordinator with EOP. And also about 15 years ago, was hired as a lecturer in the Department of Multicultural and Gender Studies. And so in that experience, I was able to then finally get into graduate school. And so I did earn my first master's in English and then learned a lot more about education at that point and higher ed. And then working with first generation students, that's what the Educational Opportunity Program works with, is working with first generation students exclusively. And so that was my connection. That's been about 20 years almost, coming up in November of 2020. It will be 20 years working with first generation students. And so I've learned a tremendous amount over the years. And then at some point while I was in there, I became a father. And then I thought, my kids are getting older. They're going to start going to school. Maybe I should also become better acquainted and understand what's happening for them in education, and be able to be better at home, but also improve my ability as an educator. And so I was then able to earn a master's here at Chico State as well in education. And then as I was finishing it up, a close friend said, "Hey, Josh, why are you not getting your doctorate in education? You're the kind of student that needs to be in a doctorate program." And so I pursued that was in a mid-December about 4 years ago. And the application was due by mid-January, so I did all I needed to do and get prepped and into the application process, was admitted. And during this whole stay-at-home experience we're having, began for us at Chico State the weekend of spring break, essentially, is when ours started in March. And about a month later, my diploma came in the mail and my dissertation was officially published. So I then earned my doctorate in educational leadership. So that's a little bit about me and my experience with education and connection to this podcast and why I wanted to pursue something with first generation students as the focus and the core of what we will be doing for this podcast. Now, let's hear from Teresa a little bit more about her connection and experience and her wonderful willingness to join me in this journey.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh. It's actually really nice too to get to know my co-host Josh a bit more as well and more of his background experience. So this is also a learning experience for me. From when I had to think about what experiences or what things to talk about, I feel like I kind of narrowed it down as much as I could to like 3 major turning points in my life, in a sense. And of course, there's a bunch of others, which I'm sure will pop up here and there. But so one of the first ones would be why I got involved and why being helping students, especially first generation students, is super important to me is because I'm a first generation student as well. And so my parents did not earn their high school GEDs. Therefore, it's me and I'm the youngest of three. I have two older brothers. The middle brother, he's 6 years older than I. He did go to UC Santa Cruz. So we're kind of the first generation in our family to go. But even then, having an older brother, because we were 6 years apart, he was kind of just finishing up as I would just go into. So he was graduating high school. And then the next year I would go, it would be my freshman year in high school. So I felt like even though I did have him, he would have answered and supported me if I had any questions. He was kind of also on his own trying to navigate. I just graduated college. How do I even begin to apply for a job? What do I look for? What do I do? So as he was experiencing new things, I was experiencing new things. We were just doing it at two different times. So one of the first moments that was kind of like my aha moment in knowing that. So for me and my family, academics is always really stressed upon. It's one of the most important things, really our priority. You'll hear it often where our parents, our family members will mention to us and my cousins, you know, I work so hard so you don't have to, so you can go to school. So you don't have to make the sacrifice of choosing one or the other. We work so you can learn. And that's a huge thing for us. And so that's what I always grew up with. And one of the moments where I really felt like I was kind of like letting them down and letting myself down is to not pursuing pursuing higher education, but not taking, I guess, like my academic seriously, was in eighth grade when I was actually failing my geometry class. Math has always been the most like incredibly difficult thing for me to comprehend. And it honestly still is. I'm more of like a English history, strongest skills in that, math not so much. And so when that happened, my mom got roped in and everything, they're telling them, had a whole parent teacher conference, and I just feel like that was like the one moment where I was like, how it was just so devastating. Like now, looking back, it doesn't seem like a huge deal, but at that moment it was such a devastating thing, feeling like I'm a failure in that aspect. And the one thing that was like, you don't reach out for help, but I didn't feel comfortable to reach out for help. We were kind of raised to have this ingrained idea of there's always an answer out there. So you have to do the work to go look for it. Not so much like make sure you utilize resources, like ask questions. That wasn't really our thing. So that was a hard idea to grasp and to learn that later on, that's going to be one of the keys to success, especially in schools, to lean on others and look for that support. And so that really came in handy when I was applying to colleges when I was graduating high school. And it was really nerve-wracking because where I went to high school, I had a great experience and I loved it, but I felt like there was only one career counselor. So she was really spread thin with helping all the seniors apply and things like that. And so I didn't really know what I was doing, and I applied to a bunch of different colleges. I really didn't take the time or was even thinking about for the breakdown of my SAT scores and my grades and like, will I be accepted into these schools? Like, what's my, you know, my ratio of getting in here and not getting in there? I kind of just applied everywhere and see which one would stick. And so that part was one of the hardest things for me. And I realized the discrepancy between the understanding of what it takes to apply to college, because you also need to really utilize your parents or guardians for their information, for FAFSA, for scholarships, like for all of these technical things I didn't really dabble too much in until I started applying to colleges. And I always remember my mentors that I had in high school, two of them specifically, who really helped me along the way. And even one who I had since elementary school, because she was actually the one in elementary when I was in ESL who taught me how to speak English. And she just kind of stuck with me until I graduated high school and just made sure I knew what I was doing and I was getting everything done. And once I thought the hardest part would be getting into college, but I came to the realization that being in college as a first generation student was probably the most difficult part of it all. Not really knowing or being actually too afraid or having that stigma of asking for help is huge. The stereotype of if you ask for help, you're going to look weak or you're going to look dumb and you shouldn't do that. That was a really hard thing to break down. And it's super frustrating now that I think back on it and just how that in certain contexts, I don't think it applies in any context, but I feel like we would take it into our educational trajectory and it would really just kind of inhibit us from asking questions, from actually getting the help we needed. And then also not being aware of support programs for first generation students in college really affected me, because I was not a part of EOP. I was not a part of TRIO or anything, any of the other programs that geared to first gen, because I didn't know about them. So I just applied to college and I just was doing my thing, going to classes, and I thought that was it for me. And so I felt a lot of stress when it came to having to communicate how my schedule was, like what my classes were, how much harder it is in high school, like the different responsibilities I had to carry, how I needed to find a job and do and balance both of them. And it was, and how expensive it was, and making sure and that I had enough money for my living expenses, because I went to San Francisco and that is not the cheapest place to go to school or to live even. It was super hard. And so I kind of just being hit by a bunch of these different obstacles that I call like quote unquote adult life, where you just get a little taste of, you know, having to put yourself through and do things on your own, stuff like that. But one of the biggest wake-up calls and why I feel so passionate about working with this specific population of students and why I want to get involved was literally my ethnic studies courses as an undergrad. I majored in Latino studies, and then I did a master's program in education, concentration, equity, and social justice. And so I knew that there were things that were in this higher ed system that were hard for first-gen students to, as well as other students, but specifically talking about first-gen students to navigate. But I never knew until I actually went through those courses that really gave you the nitty-gritty truth about higher ed, that I realized there's actual on-purpose systemic barriers put into place to keep people from pursuing and being successful and finishing higher education. And to me, that was like this really mind-blowing moment of where I just sat back and I was like, oh my God, so you're telling me that everything is happening on purpose because people didn't want me to be here. People didn't want me to be successful. They don't want me to graduate. Like, they want to keep me down. Like, and it's everywhere. Like, I started learning about it and reading these policies and how they're written and how this is funneled to gear towards a certain audience and target of students, and how this, you know, so many things like the school to prison pipeline. I could go on forever, but that was really the one moment where I was like, this is insane. Like, I need to do as much as I can, play as even a small or as big as a part, to do what I can to help these students through and let them know, like, this is what you're going against. Like, don't back down, but it's not you. It's literally the system. And that was the biggest aha moment for me.
Yeah, that's seems like a very common experience. Mm. And that's something I've learned throughout my years of working with first generation students. But more, I think, important at times is that I've been able to work with a lot of the parents and get to meet a lot of parents and hear more, because the idea of identity is one thing, just have a label, but that doesn't in and of itself mean what's really happening. As you mentioned, your last aha moment there, it's the experiences that come with different identities and different groups or different communities that we identify with and are part of. Those experiences are so important and so powerful. And that's some of the motivation behind this podcast, to help make sure we are providing voice and sharing these stories. And though, yes, all of our guests are individual people, there will be times where they represent other parts of their community as well. And people are having similar experiences who are part of that. And we're talking about experiences, and we've introduced first generation. And so it might be a good idea to share some definitions that are being used in higher education. And because quite often, first generation students are categorized simply as those who are the first in their family to attend college. And Teresa, you mentioned the systemic inequalities around higher education, that much of the system hasn't changed since the mid-1600s. And one of the other definitions then is been provided by the federal government and the U.S. Department of Education when it developed TRIO programs, which include Educational Opportunity Centers, Ronald E. McNair Postbaccalaureate Achievement, Student Support Services, Talent Search, Training Program for Federal TRIO Program Staff, Upward Bound Math Science, and Veterans Upward Bound. And that definition is that first-generation students are those whose parents have no education beyond high school or may have some college, post-secondary certificates, or associate degrees, but no bachelor degrees. And then more recently, some institutions are choosing to include students as first-generation, even if their parents have completed a four-year degree at an institution outside the United States.
Thank you for that. After going over some of the context in terms of first generation and going over some of the definitions, what I want to go into a little bit more is talk about what's happening with students regarding their roles of graduation, retention, and enrollment. So to do that, we're going to go ahead and take a look at some of the common numbers for first generation students. So first, we're going to start by talking about first generation students in higher education. And this is going to be going over national data. So nationally, 16% of first-generation students are enrolling in four-year institutions. 33% are enrolling in a mix of four- and two-year institutions, so counting in transfer students. And specifically at Chico State for the years of 2019 and 2020, 50% who were enrolled at Chico State University were considered first-generation students. So putting that into perspective, for the CSU system, it is one of the largest public education systems in the United States. And overall, for the entire CSU system, again, the population of students enrolled is 481,929 estimated total students. So of that large number, 31% of those students are students who identified that have parents or guardians that did not attend college. 23% of those students identified with parents or guardians who attended some type of college, bringing us to about 54% of students who are first generation in the overall CSU system. So narrowing it back down to Chico State, in the year of 2016 to 2017, 50% of our overall students enrolled at Chico State are first generation. In 2017-2018, 51% of those students were also first generation. In 2018-2019, 49% of our student population were first gen. Again, in 2019-2020, it was 50% of our students were first generation. And in 2020 and 2021, we have about 51% of students who are considered first generation. And each one of those years, we did have our numbers varied in enrollment. So to kind of give you a rough idea, and we'll also have further resources on our website, but we had about an enrollment of around 17,200, 300 around there for the earlier years. And for 2020 and 2021, we have about 16,700 estimated students attending Chico State and currently enrolled.
Yeah, these numbers are impactful too, Teresa. It looks like even at Chico State for the past 6 years, we were over 17,000 every year. And this is the first year since 2013-14 that we have fallen right below 17,000. But they're also meaningful, these numbers, in that first-generation students were more than seven times likely to earn bachelor's degrees if they started their career at a four-year institution. So that says a lot about the importance and the access and where a student can begin their higher education. So talking about that, what does retention then look like if we're moving from enrollment, the next phase of an experience in higher education, for numbers anyway?
Yeah, of course. So looking at the retention of our students, especially in particular considering the stop and dropout rates of our students, so which really essentially just means students who just stop overall attending their courses and going to college or drop out, kind of interchangeably use of the same terms. So by the end of 3 years, 14% of non-first generation students would stop or drop out of college, whereas 33% of first gen students would stop or drop out. So after 6 years at a campus, 43% of first generation students had left college without earning their degree. And among those who left, 60% of them did so after the first year.
Wow, that's a big difference we see there. And then we also see then the importance of where a student begins and how they move through. So in moving forward for retention and how a student stays engaged, we are seeing, based on some of the data, an increase around campuses and higher education as far as outreach, programming, and advising specifically designed for first-generation students.
because we know from the data and research that first-generation students are also less likely to be engaged in the academic and social experiences that foster or nurture success in college. Some of those things being studying in groups, interacting with faculty and other students, participating in the extracurricular activities, and then also using support services. We know working inside of EOP, whether it's remotely or in person even, having about 1,100 students enrolled in EOP at Chico State for the last 4 or 5 years, that's about our average number. Even then, trying to get students who are already part of a program to even come ask for help, even that can be difficult, and we don't see all of our students. And so that's definitely evident in our office, on our campus, and what we hear from colleagues around from other campuses as well, just getting students in. And even in a meeting I had in the last couple of days or so, a student was sharing that one of the major obstacles that she sees with her classmates is people being willing to ask for that help, even if they know it's there. So now we know then that enrollment and retention are important factors, but they're obviously connected to graduation. So Teresa, what do some of the graduation numbers look like for first generation students?
Yes, great question. So definitely enrollment and retention help to have positive graduation rates for our students, which is why they're so imperative to working with first generation students. So nationally, 42% of non-first gen students are graduating in 4 years, whereas 27% of our first generation students are graduating in 4 years. So there's a pretty big discrepancy there regarding whether or not you're a student who identifies as first generation. And in a 5-year range, that graduation rate then increases to 60% for non-first generation students and 45% for first generation students. And for at a 6-year rate, where non-first gen students are up to 64% and first gen students are up to 50%. So definite what these numbers kind of give us a sense of is that our first generation students are graduating at what seems to be about a 6-year rate, as opposed to being able to get in and out of their college in 4 years compared to their counterparts, which in this case, we're looking at non-first generation student populations.
And these are strictly just numbers of people progressing through finding success and achievement in academics. We don't then, as we mentioned before, we don't get to see then the actual experiences, right? These are just numbers. So everyone likes stories and how people are impacted. And it brings to mind for me, a student I was working with. I've been able to be the faculty advisor for the Golden Key International Honor Society for a number of years now on our campus. And there was a student who came in, she was visibly emotionally anxiety ridden. And she sat down and I said, how can I help you? Take a breath, relax. What can I do to support you here? And she said, I don't know what I'm gonna do for my career. How I'm gonna find work. How am I even gonna get work? I got a B in this class and I don't know what to do. And she was, you know, like I said, frustrated and just not sure that she was gonna be able to be successful once she graduated. And I just take a deep breath with her. And I said, you know, I happen to be this advisor for this Honor Society group, and you got the invitation recently of, you know, joining if you wanted to and are able to. And I said, where do you think you fall on our campus? We roughly have about 17,000 students. Where do you think you are in that range? She said, I don't know, top 3,000 or so up in the top. I said, you're close, except you're not so close because you're like number 12 on our entire campus. She was number 12 out of 17,000 students. So it just kind of shows the anxiety, the stress of not knowing, not having necessarily all the resources or the discussions or the experience in the family to be able to see that, okay, a B doesn't mean nothing's gonna be good for you moving forward. A B was a B, but it was her first B in college. So it was really overwhelming to her. But these numbers, like I said, are just numbers. This is now her experience we see. And so all of our students, and that's why I have the name of our podcast, right? One of Many. Each student carries their own experiences, their own concerns, their own successes, all of their own triumphs, all of these things. So it is important to keep that in mind. And so we hope that this first episode provides you some insights to where Teresa and I are coming from, and also a better understanding of first-generation student experiences in higher education, which we hope to expand on in future episodes. Speaking of which, Teresa, what are some of the topics on our calendar?
Yeah, so I'm excited to share that some of the topics that we will be discussing and you'll be tuning into are going to be assimilation, sense of belonging, so having a conversation around that. And for all of these, we will have guests attending our episodes. So not only will you just hear it from my perspective or Josh's perspective, you'll definitely get a broad spectrum of voices in this podcast that will be able to tell you or you'll listen to their stories in terms of being first gen or working with first generation students communities. We'll also have, we'll be talking about stereotype threat, imposter syndrome, what that means, what it feels like, some experiences around that. You'll also have the amazing chance to meet our musician and get to know a little bit more about Johnny Walls or Ivan Paredes. We'll also have a panel on the experience of distance learning. So we are living through a global pandemic for the first time, all our generation. So getting to the nitty gritty of what that's like and how it's been to acclimate to that change. We'll also be talking about civic engagement, voting, and rural student experiences, what that actually means and different definitions and what that looks like on our campus or our communities. And we'll also be talking about music language. So music overall, the language of music and the different definitions it could have for different people.
Excellent. And I want to add our guests we're going to have on. Our goal is to always be trying to get one guest who's a current student, first generation, so we can have a current experience from a student or two, if possible. I think one episode, we might even have three students. And then the other guests, we're going to always try and work on getting an alum who's first generation. So they may work in higher ed, they may not work in higher ed. We're just talking to different alums. So that will be our goal. And we'll do as much as we can for those types of guests so we can have the different perspectives. If it doesn't work out to always get first generation, then our guests will always be someone then who is working very intentionally and dedicated to a lot of work with first generation students. But before we go, we wouldn't be doing a good job if we didn't thank a few people. First, we want to thank Isabella McMurray for creating our amazing logo. Check it out on our website there. If you see it on your phone for our logo there, that's in large part from Isabella McMurray. And she designed it with the thought of first generation students being this person in their family who is carrying this light and raising up themselves and people around them. So if you'll see that in the logo, it's a wonderful addition to our podcast. Next, Teresa just mentioned, we want to thank Johnny Walls or Ivan Paredes for our intro music. You'll hear that every episode. We also want to thank Michael Hayes, instructor at Chico State and Butte for web design, who is helping us create our website. And then also, we want to thank EOP for supporting us. That's EOP at Chico State specifically for supporting us in this. So far, maybe other EOPs will support us along the way, but that's our goal. Thank you for listening, Teresa.
Yeah, thank you again for listening into First Generation, One of Many. Please be sure to take care of yourselves and others as you can.